Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It on WNYC. It's Monday, and on Monday, we invite WQXR creative director Clemency Burton-Hill to the All of It studio to play some classical music for us. Listeners, as you know, we're working our way through Clemmy's book. It is called Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day. If you'd like to follow along, get out your copy. We're going to be talking about April 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Hi, Clemmy.
Hi.
So April 23rd, happy birthday to the Bard.
Happy birthday to the Bard. Obviously, as a Brit, I had to acknowledge that April the 23rd is the day that Shakespeare was born, a happy day. Also the day that he died, and it's St. George's Day, patron saint of England. So I chose music that acknowledged the incredibly intimate connection between music and Shakespeare through the ages. There are legions of composers who've wanted to set music to Shakespeare's words, which I guess makes total sense. Think of someone like Hector Berlioz, the French Romantic composer. He said the discovery of Shakespeare struck him like a thunderbolt, revealing the whole heaven of art, illustrating it to the remotest corners. But you think of other Shakespearean composers and their people like Mendelssohn, Tchaikovsky, Verdi, Prokofiev, Sibelius, Vaughan Williams, Leonard Bernstein. Really, anyone worth their musical chops tends to want to set Shakespeare's words. But I've chosen a woman called Jocelyn Pook, who was born in 1960. She wrote the soundtrack to a film version of The Merchant of Venice from 2004. You might remember it starred Al Pacino. And I love the fact that she manages to capture the sort of atmosphere of Shakespeare's own time musically. So he was obviously writing in the early Renaissance era, and if she manages to kind of evoke the musical mood of that time, but she gives it a bit of a modern twist. And she sets here very luscious poetry from Act 5, Scene 1. How sweet the moonlight sleeps upon this bank. Creates this really atmospheric soundtrack, I think, to that movie. And so it's such an interesting take. When I was doing the research for the book, I went to the Oxford University Press catalogue, the Shakespeare Music Catalogue, and realised that there are more than 20,000 Shakespeare-related pieces of music, at least, that we know of, that have been catalogued by Oxford University. So there are probably many more out there. 20,000. So happy birthday tomorrow to William Shakespeare.
I love on April 25th, you write, these are now the most famous four bars in musical history.
Well,
what a great setup. I was like, what's coming?
So I don't know, what would you say if you just had to pluck out of the musical canon, Alison? You might just go, da-da-da-da. It is Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 in C minor. And it is hard to imagine a time when those bars weren't known, but I was really intrigued when I was doing the research to discover how that piece came into being, because you have to spare a thought for the poor orchestral musicians who had to give the premiere of that piece in 1808. They were sight reading, essentially. They had one rehearsal and then they had to give the concert. And I just sometimes that just, it just sort of makes me feel a little awestruck, the idea that this piece didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And then they were given some sheet music and had to create it. And then it existed in the world. But it's so famous. I actually chose the fourth movement. This is for the 24th of April, because I find this just an unbelievable sort of spirit raiser. This is just such a fantastically effervescent beginning of the movement in particular. And I think when you think about the debt that Beethoven, or rather that contemporary composers mm-hmm. owe to Beethoven, this always reminds me of the sort of greatest film music. Think of John Williams or something like that. And it just kind of, you know, makes me want to get going with my day. And always thinking about the fact that by this stage in his life, Beethoven was already deaf. So let's hear it. This is the fourth movement, the Allegro Presto, from Beethoven's Symphony No. 5 in C minor.
I hear the John Williams there.
There you go.
I hear the John when you mention. I said John Williams, but just in that moment.
Exactly. I always feel, you know, John Williams is a singular genius. I'm not in any way suggesting that, you know, he was unduly influenced by Beethoven, but I love that connection across space and time. We've talked about this before. You know, all of these composers are kind of in dialogue with each other, and that rollicking exuberance. And as I mentioned, you know, Beethoven was almost entirely deaf by the time that he wrote this. How is it possible that he was able to create something that was just so joyous and so rich and so full? So that was a little bit of a musical marvelling to be done on the 24th of April.
Well, on the 25th of April, you bring us a family affair.
It's a family affair indeed. So this is by arguably the most famous Finnish composer, Sibelius, who was born in 1865. He died in 1957. And this was a piece that he wrote for incidental music for a play that his brother-in-law was directing. So I like the fact that, you know, we think about these towering geniuses, whether it's Beethoven or Sibelius or whoever it might be. And, you know, the fact is that he, you know, asking in the pub or something, you know, would you play this for us? Would you write this mm-hmm. for me? And he was like, all right then, go on then. So he apparently wrote this, which is called Valse Triste, which was one of the acts from this incidental music, when he was upstairs in a restaurant in Helsinki called Kemp, which is apparently still there today. Sibelius was a famously heavy drinker. He liked to partake of rather a lot of vodka. But on the day that he wrote this, he apparently suffered from a nasty cold, a bit like me today. Apologies for my snotty nose. But he was aided by plenty of oysters, quinine and soda. And he wrote this piece, which is really incredibly beautiful, Valse Triste. It sort of outlived the play, put it that way. So he wrote this kind of moody waltz that became more of a big deal than the play itself, and is now a real favourite for orchestras to play as a concert piece. So here it is. It's from Kuolema, which was the name of the play, and it's the first movement, Valse Triste.
picturing dancers. I don't know why.
Well, it's a waltz. That kind of makes sense. I have to say, it's a waltz.
That's why I picture dancers.
It's great. It does what it says on the tin. This is perfect. It's a perfect reaction. I have to say, I don't know anything about the play for which it was written, other than the fact that the title, Koelema, with apologies for my pronunciation of Finnish, means death. And I think I undersold his brother-in-law, Arvid Janefelt. I think I said that he directed it. He actually wrote it, this play, in 1903. So I don't know what it was all about, but it made Alison Stewart want to dance. That can only be a good thing on a Monday afternoon.
Clemency Burton Hill, thank you so much. The name of her book is Year of Wonder, Classical Music to Enjoy Day by Day. We'll see you next Monday, Clemmy.
Thanks.
Coming up on All of It, some good vibes for Earth Day, courtesy of some fifth graders and Wade Davis, former professional athlete and now LGBTQ activist. Stay with us.